on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is October 16th. We are halfway through the month of October 2015. Now, we made it through another week, halfway through, or the month, which is kind of important. October is known, I've said this before, as putting in a bottom, where a rally starts from. But also, October is known for big down periods, lots of volatility. It's common. Remember the 1987 crash? That was late October. I think what happened in October 20th. Just a minute. I got the Wall Street Journal right here. It was October 20th, 1987. That was that big 500-point crash. And in today's market, that would equal about 3,000 points on the Dow. One day. So October is known for that. It's also known to begin the rally. The Christmas rally, the year-end rally. You know, it's, in other words, a bottom is put in. Now, we've seen a bottom put in August, and then that we've seen the market fall in August, bounce up, fall again to that same bottom in the very last trading day of September, and then kind of starting to move up again. Even though this week was kind of sideways to up a little bit, we've had a move up from that bottom. So could we say that, you know, we are now into a year-end rally? Or are we going to, is this what we call a bear trap, trying to get people to believe that that's what this is? And once they're all in, roll over and go down again. Excuse me. No one really knows. No, there's no crystal ball. And you know, every Friday, I talk about my newsletter. We send out an e-newsletter every Friday. And we call it the premium newsletter. It's amazing how the press talks about the weakening Chinese economy. It's not that they talk about it or write about it. It's how much they talk about and write about it. It's like a never-ending thing that something is bad in China. And you have to put it in a little perspective. China's growth has fallen from 7.5% to maybe 6.5%. Of course, they're targeting 7%. We would give our right arm for 4% growth here in the United States. We would love that. See, it's all put. You got to put it in perspective. It's a big economy. It's naturally going to slow down, and at the same time, it's had big problems. I'm just thinking that, you know, there is a big impact on China on other countries, the EU, Germany's exports to them, Japan. So it does spread around. We are about the only ones that are not nearly as impacted as a lot of other countries. We are impacted. Don't make that mistake. But, you know, our trade with China represents a fraction of our economy. So it's not like that important to us. Remember, we are a consumer-driven economy. And that's one of the problems with China. They are trying to become a consumer-driven economy instead of a manufacturing-driven economy. Mind you, we have manufacturing here too, and it's looking pretty good, even though our manufacturing has slowed down because our exports have slowed down, because our dollar is stronger, because our economy is stronger. But that we don't rely on exports. Now, China's relying less and less, but it's still a big part of their economy. And then you got the real estate bubble that's popped there that we don't really get to see. Yeah, huge loans outstanding. So, but China's going to do something to spur their economy. Don't think they're just going to let it go. That was in the premium newsletter. There's a portfolio management section there. I talked about the Federal Reserve quantity easing measures that helped our economy recover. But you know, what has it done now for us? What about inflation? We're looking at deflation, not inflation right now. But with all that quantitative easing, is that going to produce inflation down the road? The assumption is that it will. Consumer Watch talked about home buying. You know, Realty Track, a real estate information company, did a study on 32 million real estate sales, 32 million of them over the many years. Guess what they said about October? The month of October has the best deals. You can make the best deals in October. There's reasons for that. It's in the newsletter. You can get it for $9.99 a month. It comes out every Friday. So you can cancel anytime. There's no commitment. No. You can have it for a month. 888-99-CHARGE is our number. If you want to order the newsletter, you got to go to investtalk.com. 888-992-4278. Time for our question and answer period. Let's take this question from our 24 listener line.
Hi, this is Robert. I'm a podcast listener from Sacramento. I had a question on your previous program about options, and I had a friend that used to work or worked for Tesla, and when they gave them a stock option to buy a stock, they could buy the stock within 6 months and buy it at its lowest price in that 6 months. What I think I kind of understood from your show about the options is it possible for me to do that same thing, but not in Tesla, just in general? You know, where you set up options to try and buy a stock, and if it went up a whole bunch later on, you get to buy that stock at that cheaper price, or let them expire, and let's just say if it is possible to do that, how much does it cost? So I hope I said that question correctly. I'll be listening on the podcast tonight. Thank you.
So the answer is no, you can't do what your friend is doing. That's not really the options we're talking about. The company is offering their employees the options. It's different than the options market trading. When a company offers options, that's a form of compensation, and they will give you the right to buy the stock at a certain price over a certain time. So in that sense, the option works the same. But you can't get involved with that. But there is an options market out there that you, and almost, as I said, almost all options expire on the third Friday of every month. So you only have a 1 month window on these options, and then they expire. And yes, you had to pay for them. It's called a premium. You have to pay for them to have the option, and the options are different. Okay, but you know, so almost all options expire the third Friday of every month, but there are different kinds of. See, as I get into this, I know I'm going to confuse people. But anyways, you can buy an option that the company is going to go up in price, but you have to lock it in. It's got to be within 30 days. And that's the major difference. An option as a benefit to an employee, you know, they may say, we're going to give you a 10,000 options, that you can buy options to buy 10,000 stocks at $52 within the next 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. And maybe the company is selling for $40 now. See, that's how those options work, and it depends on how the company and how they want them offer them. It's different. It's not, that's an employee compensation tool versus a market of trading options, buying and selling them. Very different. Thanks for the question, though. Options can get complex. There's many ways to play them. And I only mentioned yesterday only one option, a call option. There's put options. And then there's a million different kinds of strategies. But it can get very complex. Don't do options until you're very well versed on how they work. I think too many people think it's an easy way to make money. One of the reasons why I think it's attractive is because it doesn't take a lot of money to invest in options, because you're paying just for the premium. You're not actually necessarily having to buy the stock. Don't necessarily have to do that. And again, as I talk more and more about it, it gets more and more complex, and I am not an expert on options. I don't do options, but I know they get very, very complex. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? The show is always focused on the listener and their questions, not what I want to talk about. Yesterday, I wanted to get to a Walmart. We're going to get to that today, I promise you, before the end of the day. I want to talk about Walmart And I might have a bias on it because we do own Walmart and our managed accounts, but I think we need to clear up the air. It got beat up this week, and I need to make sure everybody understands what's going on. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. I want to hear your comments, your questions, if we can. I'd like to hear them today. A new info sheet went out today to all InvestTalk insiders. It's called Leading Economic Indicators. Do you know what the difference between leading economic indicators and lagging economic indicators are? Watching for the signs of weakness in the economic cycle before a recession is important, and you can do that by watching the leading economic indicators. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you get it free. All these info sheets that we write up and produce, sign up free on InvestTalk.com. How much can you stand to lose? Are you too close to retirement to be in stocks, or should you stay in throughout your retirement years? And that's going to be one of our main talking points today. How much can you stand to lose? The others are, as I said earlier, we're going to talk about Walmart. I really want to get to that. Warren Buffett, why hedge funds fail. Now, I've mentioned this before, but of course, when he says something, everybody listens. When I say something, nobody listens, which is probably justified since he's the smartest trader, investor there is out there, most successful. And I want to talk about avoiding cyber theft. Cyber theft. How do you avoid it? How to avoid it. There's some rules that I can give you that help you avoid that. And that's going to be our talking points today. But what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? Talk about anything you want. The market was up again. It was up pretty good yesterday, pretty big yesterday, and up again. Dow was up 74, NASDAQ up 17, and the S&P up 9. But don't get too excited. The market is still, I think, down about 8% for the year. And it looks like it's trying to crawl up, So it's approaching another big resistance area. Still trading below 200-day moving average on the S&P 500. So that's usually a long-term negative signal, by the way. That's why I mentioned it. But it looks like it's coming up. It broke up above some resistance level last Friday. Had a couple down days this week, a flat day and two down days, and then now these last two up days. And these two up days were bigger than the two down days. So, yeah, we look like we're moving back up, or at least trying to. And, well, our earnings seasons, we're in earnings seasons. It's not full swing earnings season. We'll get a lot more started next week. But earnings seasons has so far, it's been kind of disappointed. There's been a few companies that beat their expectations and some that haven't beat their expectations. But the expectations are so low that even beating them is not very impressive. The numbers compared to a year ago quarter are pretty bad. Now, don't think just as I say that, oh, the market's going to collapse. No, everybody knows that. Everybody in the market, traders, investors, know they're going to be bad. They've already reacted to them, probably reacted to them back in August when the market collapsed. Yeah, so we know it. Everybody's looking forward. We're going to see what the CEOs say about the future. What's going to happen in next quarter, the next quarter? What's the GDP number going to be in next quarter? We haven't even reported the GDP number this year, this quarter, but everybody's already thinking it's not going to be very good. Remember the market always looks forward. And they're saying, are we going to, is the Fed going to raise rates? And it feels like they're not going to. And maybe that means money is going to stay. Maybe we need to stay in the market because of that. You see, that it's always looking forward. We're always guessing. We are, We're always guessing. 888-99-CHARGE, our number, 888-992-4278. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. And you can join the conversation by calling. This is Invest Talk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Nothing is more critical, more central to your retirement plan, and it represents the largest chunk of most retirement nest eggs. How to manage a better-than-average 401k. That's our talking point for Monday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Give me a call. We'll talk about anything financial that you want to talk about. Now, new bear market threat forces the issue. How much can you stand to lose? Everybody has fresh in their mind 2008, where they lost 50% of their value of their money. Everybody's worried about that. Everybody's worried. We've had a correction this year. The market's down, but it's not disastrous. It's really not. But, you know, you have to be realistic. You're not going to make money every year. It's just not going to happen. And in a bear market, when it comes, don't freak out. You'll have time to react. It's not going to drop like in 1987, you know, 20% in one day. Well, I can't say it will never happen because it has happened. But that kind of reaction is extremely unusual. Look how bad the market was in 2008. You had plenty of time to get out. Because the market, if you remember right, do you remember that October was very volatile down that year? You know how I remember that one? Because that's the first time I ever been to Europe. And I was in a 10-day vacation, longest vacation I've had in I can't tell you how many years. Or I can't tell you how many decades. And I was in Germany when the market started to fall apart. I was on the phone all night long, calling here, because during the day here. And that's how I know. It was in October. Okay? And October is very volatile, as we warned you. So, you know, this October, you need to be cautious. I grant that. But you do normally have time to react. So don't freak out. And not every sell-off is a bear market. A bear market is where the market falls more than 20% or more, or over 20%, however you want to describe it. But 20% is the demarcation point. We were only down 13% from the most. 13. And most of the economic indicators are still pointing to growth, not shrinkage. Now, there is bad news. One of them is corporate profits are fading and going down and looking too good. Also, there's a struggling global economy out there that's just not helping us. If they get on the other side and start growing, it would help us greatly. But they're trying to drag us down, and they are dragging us down. It's slowing our growth. But it won't drag us into recession necessarily. And by some measures, the stock market is still not cheap. It's not cheap. As earnings go down, it makes it look like it's more expensive. And of course, finally, the Federal Reserve, with its threat of raising rates, looms over everything. Okay, are they going to? Aren't they going to? What are they going to do? You know, even though 0.25% of a rate increase certainly is pretty minor and will have no impact, people still are worried about it. Anyways, that's our main talking point today. Don't get too scared. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask us anytime you want. We'll play it on the next program. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. I love your show. It's John from Phoenix. I have a question. I have a variable universal life policy that I'm trying to sell. There's no surrender charge on it, but when I look at the mutual funds, there are 8 of them that are in the policy. The company that provides the policy told me that they only sell those mutual funds specifically to that insurance company. So when I try to look it up online, they don't actually have any data anywhere on it. All I can see is the data for the day that is currently being in progress. So I never know when to sell and when a good time is to sell. So I don't know if I should just take it all off the table now and invest it in something else. So I don't know. Thank you very much. I'd like to hear your input.
Yeah, well, those are special kinds of shares, usually of a popular mutual fund, you know, like an H share, not a normal share, H share, I mean, meaning that they have a lot of the same companies in there, but you're right, you don't get to see the insides of them. They built these specialty funds for these insurance companies so they can be special. Only you can get theirs. But to me, they're non-transparent, just like you pointed out. You don't want them to be special. You want to know what's in them and what they do, what's their track record, all that kind of stuff. It's harder to find. I would just sell them. I don't like universal life or whole life policies. I don't think they're very good investment vehicles. I don't think they're very good insurance vehicles. If you want to have life insurance, go buy a term life policy. And of course, there are needs for life insurance, but make sure you have a need for it. Don't just say, I think I should have one, but why? If you can't answer the why, then why are you buying it? If you can't answer why, that means someone's selling it to you. Not that you're just buying it, someone sold it to you. You were sold on the idea. Insurance companies love to do that. Anyways, I would just sell it and go invest in something else, personally. That's what I do. 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk. We've reached the halfway mark. Gosh, the first half hour goes by so fast. There's still plenty of time. You can still join in the conversation. Now, we want you to decide, what our next webinar topic might be. I give you certain choices. So take our instant survey. Choose from our list and write it down. Or you can write down your idea, too. There's freedom to do that. Just go to investtalk.com. Click on the investment tag, Invest Talk tab, and click on webinar.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
Art in Menlo Park, how you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
I just wanted to see what you would do if your broker, they just sent me a notification that they got their system hacked into.
Oh,
and
man.
Apparently my information was part of the hacking, I guess. And they gave me like a credit company to go through, but it wasn't one of the top three, I don't think.
You mean when you say
from what I hear,
when you say credit company, you mean the company that prevents cyber theft?
Well, actually, it was a company that I guess you check your credit to see if anybody like opened up new accounts or that's similar to Equifax or TransUnion, but it wasn't. And it wasn't the top three, so I never even heard of it. But from what I understand, if you go into it, they want to charge you. So
You should make them pay for at least a year's worth. That's what I think. If they were hacked, then that means their systems weren't very good, and they should be, and they should pay for at least a year's worth of protection. And I'd call them up and tell them that. That's what I would do, Art. I'd say, Hey, you know, you guys are the one that have my information stolen. Either I close the account and you won't see me again, or you pay for that for a year, for protecting my information for against someone else trying to steal my information. At least protect me from that. That's what I would probably do. That I would call them up and tell them either that or I'm leaving. You can always take in a small claims court, but this is the problem, Art. You have to have damages, and you don't really have any damage when they stole your information. But once you have damage, that means they stole your information and then used it and got something out of you. Yeah. So you don't want that to happen. So it's hard to take in a small claims court just because they were hacked. But you can make them pay for protecting your information or protecting your, against thefts. Of that information and using that information, opening up an account or a credit card or something in your name,
Yeah.
Do you know what they got, Art? Did they get your social security number?
I believe so. I mean, as far as I know, that they've got all the information that they had, which I provided when I signed in signed up.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons.
I imagine they'd have that.
But. Yeah. Well, that's what I would do, Art. It's tough. Right. It's really tough. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you, Art. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was wondering what your opinion would be for Amazon, please.
Amazon is just a miracle company. AMZN, everybody knows, provides online retail services which enable merchandise to be bought and sold. Everybody does that. Now. Everybody uses it. I mean, I use it. Amazon is selling at, they're going to make $1.61 a share this year. They lost 52 cents a share last year. And next year, earnings are going to really jump to $4.86. Its stock is $570 stock. It's hard for me to imagine why people pay so much for Amazon when they don't make a lot of money. Even when they make $4.89, which is a huge jump for them next year, it's a $570 stock. That's 100 PE. When the average PE out there over any length of time for anybody is 15. And I understand, they're growing nicely. They're still growing their sales 15 to 20% a quarter. But it certainly seems overpriced. Now, having said that, Mike, they're probably going to continue to be overpriced. I'm not saying they're going down because of it. I'm just saying it's just super expensive. And for me, I can't buy this kind of company that kind of cost. It's just not something I would do. But if you're going to buy it, well, it broke out today. I think you'd buy it here. I really do. You buy it here. It broke out.
I think after earning, they're saying it shot up to be like $630 or so.
Earnings? No, they're going to earn $1. They're probably going to earn $1.61 this year per share, and then $4.86 next year. It's a huge jump next year. But remember, Mike, everybody knows that because I'm telling you what it is, and if I can see it, everybody else sees it. So that's already built into the stock. But now people are going to look for different information to see if it should drive the stock higher. It's just very expensive. Very good company, very expensive. Mike, appreciate the call. Okay. Let's go to James in Santa Clara. How you doing, James?
Regular, Steve.
Thanks for taking my call. Thank you.
First Data, I used to own this company a long time ago, and it was bought out. And then it just went public again. My question is, they were bought out, they were around $60 a share. Now they came public yesterday at $16.
Right.
Is that the same company? I don't get it. Did they issue more shares?
Yeah. When they went private, they took all the shares out of the float. They're gone and owned, okay? And when they go public again, it's all brand new shares. It's not the same shares. They're different. And the number of shares are different. The numbers they issue of shares are different. So it's a whole new ball game. So you can't really rely on the last when it was First Data public company a long time ago versus First Data company today. It's not the same. The company is the same, but the shares and the price of shares all different. More or less shares and earnings per share numbers are all going to be different. So they made $1. We don't have a lot of information. They made, it's really, the information we have is pretty old as far as what they made. So I really can't tell you if this is good or bad. I can't. It's big, $12 billion, but I can't tell you if $16 a share is a good price when it came public. And, what was that, yesterday? It came public yesterday? Yeah.
Right, yesterday, yep, yeah.
Yeah, I got up to...
I picked some up yesterday, but I'm not sure if it's going to be a...
I wouldn't pay attention to it. I wouldn't look at it right now because you really don't have enough information yet to base anything on. James, appreciate the call. FDC, First Data Corporation, everybody. Appreciate that. We were talking about cyber theft just a minute ago, and here's something, sometimes if you're not the ones getting the information is not stolen from you, obviously if you provide your information to somebody else, which almost everybody has to these days, it can be stolen from them. But how you personally can avoid it from stealing it from your computer, well, you can avoid public Wi-Fi. All that free Wi-Fi out there? There's hackers that are sitting in these public Wi-Fi spots trying to access your computer through the airways of that public Wi-Fi. So avoid them. You don't need to use them. If you go to a website, make sure they have HTTPS, the S on the end, HTTPS. That is usually a means more secure website, a more secure website. Okay? Don't store your credit card number if you can avoid it, at somebody's web page. You know, of course, many people do. Amazon, you put in your credit card number, they store it. But it'd be wiser to put it in every time you go buy something and then not store it. Don't email your credit card information to somebody. Don't. But you should use credit cards online because there's certain protections from a credit card company on that. I'll tell you a little quick story. I was talking to a client, this was some time ago, who banked with Bank of America. And, you know, he was doing online banking. And Bank of America sent him an email, and it was the exact same logo, same type, font. He's always was used. They sent him an email and asked him, we are doing a credit check and a data check of our information. And they wanted his credit card number, that he got through Bank of America, and his bank account number. Type it in, please type it in these spots and respond to us. That was all fake. It looked exactly original, but it was all fake. They were just trying to get his information. So if you get an email from a bank that you're doing business with, or an investment bank, or anybody you're doing business with, and they're asking for, in an email, Social Security, credit card number, driver's license number, you know, bank account number, do not put it in. Banks don't do that. They've learned their lesson. They don't do that. Okay? Time for Invest Talk 101, everybody. You just love West Talk 101, don't you? I hope. If you don't like it, you need to let me know. This is the day-to-day choices that we try to help you with in your everyday life. We're always looking for good underpriced stocks here at KPP Financial, but how about underpriced real estate markets? There was a report by CNN that talked about this. First on the list was Detroit. Detroit from 2000, and these are prices on these various locations from 2006 to 2015. Detroit is still 50% below their 2006 prices. Now, Detroit is starting to come back. It is. The city is no longer in bankruptcy. Next city, Orlando. Orlando is 40% lower than still today than in 2006. Housing is cheap in Central Florida. The median price is about $139,000. Far below the $235,000 it was in 2006. Las Vegas. Now, Las Vegas real estate market construction has really picked up, but they're still 40% below their highs in 2006. And because building and construction has picked up, it's kept prices pretty low. Sarasota, Florida, 31% below that. 28% below in Phoenix. Phoenix is a major city. They had a big housing boom and bust. But they also have a pretty strong recovery. So think about that. That's Invest Talk 101. You can read more about these underpriced markets. Look for a link on investtalk.com. It's under today's talking point.
Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial. Now KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the best possible choices when it comes to decisions about your home. And of course, KPP has a range of investment programs to suit different life situations and goals. Visit investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
Oh, hi, Steve and Justin. I'm calling in to ask a question about contributing to a traditional IRA. I need to get back into the workforce, and if one can only find a part-time job, can you still contribute into a traditional IRA? And what is the maximum amount allowed? If only working part-time, or is there another way of contributing into traditional IRA? Thank you. I enjoy the show.
Yes, if you work part-time, you can contribute to an IRA. If you make any money at all, earned income, you can contribute to an IRA. I think the maximum is $6,000, and then another $1,000 catch up. But it could be $5,500 and then $1,000 catch up if you're over 50. In other words, it would be 55 to 65. I'm not positive about that. You can Google that and get that because it changes a lot. And I should know it, but I don't. But yeah, it doesn't matter if you work part-time, full-time, or just for a month or two. You can't contribute more in your IRA than what you make, though. If you made $2,000 in a year from earned income, you can't contribute $3,000. Because you didn't make enough money for that. So the answer is yes, you can do that. I also have an email question. Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm interested in a high dividend ETF, SDIV, that has a heavy weight on REITs, real estate investment trusts, and maybe financial sectors. Could you talk a little bit about this? I certainly can. SDIV is an exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the global super dividend index. It pays a 6.9%. Now, I don't know this one. When I see something like this, when it's 6.9%, I need to know what they hold in this index because that's really high. That's really good. And as long as there's proper diversification and the companies they earn, they own in that index, they have in the index, can sustain those dividends, I'm okay with it. I do have a bunch of ETFs. I have a number, maybe five or six, a list of ETFs, five or six of them, that I share with anybody who asks for it. It's a list of high dividend paying ETFs. So I don't know much about this one, and it looks like it moves up and down with the market. You know, not as dramatic as the market. It doesn't have that big swing up and down, but it does move up and down with the market. SDIV. So you need to find out what's inside it. And I did not look that up. I'm sorry today. But that's what I would do. Find out what's inside it. See if those dividends are sustainable. Maybe time for a review of your retirement accounts. Each month I schedule a day or two to visit one of our satellite offices in California. I'll be in San Jose November 11th for the day. One-to-one meetings with listeners who would like to review their retirement portfolio, talk about our programs, see if they want to hire us as their money manager. But if you just have questions, that's fine too. Times are set up on first-come, first-served basis. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. Or you can call 888-99-CHART, follow the prompts.
Our podcast distribution is made possible every day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Gaining knowledge in the investment world is a never-ending process. The more that we learn, the more we begin to understand that there are things we still don't know. We have a whole list of essential books for investors. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
888-992-4278. Let's talk about hedge funds. Warren Buffett talk to somebody about and why hedge funds fail. I've been whining or complaining about hedge funds for years. But maybe with Warren Buffett on this bandwagon, maybe people will start to listen. That's great. Hedge funds are a ripoff, everybody. They really are. This is how you hear about them in the news, and you hear a lot about how they make so much money. And that's really a very misleading perception. Hedge funds, you work this way. They charge a fee, many times 2%, which most money managers charge, 2% or less. And then they charge 20% of profits if they make money. They live off that 2%. That's where they're making their money. But they have everybody convinced that it's the 20% profits are going to do really good. I'll give them 20% profits because they're going to make profits and they're going to make lots of money. Well, the facts are hedge funds go out of business all the time. One just happened last week. Did you hear about it? No. You only hear about when hedge funds do really, really good or are criminal, one or the other. Not about the average hedge funds that fails. I think the number is, let's see, how many fail? Like 2 in 7 fail? It's pretty big. It's that they go out of business. And what they do is they just close up shop. And what I love is the ones that are surviving, the ones that survive are the successful ones. And those are the ones that get a lot of press. The ones that fail, they just close up quietly and go away. Stay away from hedge funds. They're just not a good, and you're only, hedge fund investors are supposed to be wealthy. That's what they're supposed to be. Why some people that are wealthy are not that smart, so don't think that they're all that smart. I would never invest in a hedge fund. Now, I want to talk about Walmart. We own Walmart in our managed account, so I would like to get to that if we can before the end of the show. Your question comes first, though, and this is going to be the last question. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Nick. I have a question about Hartford Financial, symbol HIG. I currently own this stock, and I just want to know your thoughts. Thank you.
HIG, Hartford Financial, Group Life, Group Disability, Property and Casualty Insurance Company, a $20 billion company. They were shrinking for months. Every quarter, they've been shrinking their sales, except for the most recent quarter, the June quarter. They grew 1%. So they're going to make $4 a share this year. That's up from $3.36 a share last year, and then $4.18 next year. So, and pays 1.8% dividend. They don't have much debt. The stock is 12 PE. It's a $47 stock. It's going to make $4.18. So that means it's going to be a 11, 12 PE. And you would think, well, that's fairly low. But its five-year range is 5 to 13. So that's at the high end of their range. I don't think much of it. It's a big company, not growing very much, and not paying high enough dividend for me to hold on to and wait. So it wouldn't be something that I'd be interested in, really. HIG, Hartford Financial. Good, solid company. It's just that there's not much excitement to it. Walmart announced earlier this week that they are going to spend a lot of money, a lot of profits, on improving their stores and their online presence. Spending a lot of money to beef up their online presence. Okay, and got killed today, this week, for that. Now, when I think about it, I think, wait a minute, we talked about Amazon earlier in the show. Amazon spends billions of dollars, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on improving their online presence, and then the stock just goes up and up and up and up. Walmart says that's what they'd like to do, and they'll get crushed. Walmart makes a lot more money than Amazon per share. Ton more. I find it interesting. The long-term thinking at Walmart, thinking we got to do this for our future, is negative. When Amazon does the same thing, it's positive. I understand they're very different retailers. I understand that. But you can't say Walmart's any less successful than Amazon. And over the years, Walmart's made a lot more money than Amazon. There are very good reasons to think about that. Think about it. Hour's up. Thank you for being here and spending this time with me. I appreciate it. If you have a money topic you'd like me to talk about, send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. If you have a question you want answered, call our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you join us again next week.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.